song because I kind of take people through my back pages. And a couple of years ago, I did that song at the Old Town School of Folk Music where I learned how to play banjo and guitar. And while I was at the school, they asked me if I'd teach a class. I said, okay. So my wife came up and I went over to this class, and it was all these little children. The guitars were bigger than they were. And Kimmel said, you know, Roger's been playing professionally for over 50 years. And they got this glazed look in their eyes. She said, well, that's half 100. And they got even more glazed. Then I played a couple of songs. One little girl turned to the other and said, wow, he's awesome. The other girl said, yeah, well, he's been playing for 55 million years. I'm going to do a song now that I wrote for a low-budget motorcycle movie. A friend of mine was putting together a Bacher flick and wanted to save some money on the budget, so he dubbed his rock and roll records onto the soundtrack. And it sounded pretty good. But he wanted a song that was custom written for the movie, like a theme song. So he got on a plane in L.A. and flew to New York, rented the screening room, and he screened the movie for Bob Dylan, hoping Bob would write him a song. Bob sat there in the screening room, wrote down some notes on a little paper napkin, said, give this to Lewin. Don't know if he did. So Peter Fonda took the napkin, got back on a plane in New York, and flew out to L.A. He came over to my house, and this napkin was like the Holy Grail. He presented it to me like, Bob wants you to have this, man. I looked at it, it said, the river flows, it flows to the sea. Wherever that river goes, that's where I want to be, flow, river, flow. So I got my guitar out, made up a tune for it, and finished off the words, and we called it The Ballad of Easy Rider. The river flows, it flows to the sea. Wherever that river goes, that's where I want to be. Flow, river, flow. But you want to wash down, take me from this road. All we wanted was to be free, and that's the way it turned out to be. But you want to wash down, take me through this cold, and the sun. Go to the sea, the river flow, that the shade creeps. Oh, the later, I got a phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning. It was Bob. He said, what's this credit? I don't need the money. You can take it off. I said, okay. What a guy, huh? Well, here's a song that's part of Peter Fonda's record collection done by the Birds, and it was on the Easy Rider soundtrack tape. She may beg, she may plead, she may argue. Darkness at the break of noon, shadows eating the silver spoon. The handmaid laid the child's balloon, he puts it both the sun and moon. You understand, you know too soon, there is no sense in crying. The foreign threads of gloves, scorn, suicide, the marks of torn from the pool to a mouthpiece of hollow arms. He's not busy being born, he's busy dying. So don't fear, we need you here before it's out to your ears. It's alright, I'm a winning man. As out the door, you finally find yourself at water once, waterfalls of bitter gorge. You feed the bone with a black and all. You discover that you just be one more person crying. And within the lust of the authority, they do not respect in any creed. You despise their jobs and destinies. They jealously offend and free. You can do just be nothing for the something they invest in. Make the rule for the last man in the flow. It's all right, love. I'm only sighing. Science and superstition, and lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. It's the fifth dimension. Here's a little song I wrote about it for the Bird's Fifth Dimension Hour. Oh, how is it that I could come out of here? a Stacy song from the Burt's Fifth Dimension album. And sing along with you over the chorus. Sweetheart of the Rodeo. I got the words wrong. Yeah, I sang, pack up your money and pick up your tent. It should have been, pick up your money and pack up your tent. Bob doesn't like you to mess with his lyrics. So a couple of years later, he did that song on record, and he did it like this. Lights so swift, rain's pouring in. I'm gonna see a movie called Come Get In. Pick up your money, pack up your tent, McGuinn. I suppose it's really cool to be in a Bob Dylan song. But we liked that song so much that we made it the single of The Sweetheart of the Rodeo. And we took it over to a DJ in Nashville and asked him to play it on the big 50,000-watt WSM radio station. And he put it on a little preview turntable and listened to it about 10 seconds worth. He said, I'm not going to play that on my show. We said, why not? He said, what's it about? He said, I don't know. It's a Bob Dylan song. And then he went into a commercial. He said, no matter what kind of a rig you drive, the Clark seat will fit it. So go on down to your Clark dealers today and get a Clark seat put in your rig mile after mile. You'd be glad you did. Grant Parsons and I were there. We kind of looked at each other like, this guy's not a real trucker. He reminded us of the people who dress up like cowboys and hang out at the drugstore. So a couple months later, we were over in London in a hotel room, and we had a guitar. We were passing back and forth and playing some songs and trying to think of a song to write, something to write a song about. I said, hey, remember that DJ in Nashville who wouldn't play our record? Let's write a song about him. He's a drugstore truck driving man. He's in love with you, Bucks Plan. When the summer rolls around, if he's lucky if he's not in town. He's got his house on the hill. He plays country records until you may fail. He's a fireman's friend, he's an almighty chick. But he sure does think different from the records he played. And he's a drugstore truck driving man. What's he the head of?
He's the head of the
Blue Bus Man. When someone rolls around, he'll be lucky if he's not at home. Boy, he's been like a father to me. He's the only DJ you can hear at the three. And I'm an all-night musician from a rocking old band. Why he don't like me, I can't understand. He's a drugstore truck driving man. He's the head of the Ku Klux Klan. When summer rolls around, he'll be lucky if he's not in town. He'll be lucky if he's not in town. Back in the 60s, we could have got through the 60s in about half the time. Well, here's one more from the Sweetheart of the Rodeo. It's a Woody Guthrie song about the outlaw. Pretty wonderful. Thank you. So he could get a loud instrument, and the 12 string was plenty loud. So he bought it, and that night he decided to change his name from Cutie Leadbelly to Leadbelly. He went to a party and said, "Here comes Leadbelly," and he played 12 string all night long. He became the king of the 12 string, and he influenced other players to play the 12 string like Pete Seeger, who in turn influenced thousands of other players like me to play the 12 string. So when I got my 12 string, I had to learn a Leadbelly song to go along with it. This is a song that I used to do then. Well, rockin' and light is a mighty good boy. Rockin' and light, and it's a little bit right. Rockin' and light, it's a mighty good boy. Keep on running on the right like fun. Get your ticket at the station on rockin' and light. Hey, see, but that's lousy. Cat's in the cupboard, but she don't see me. Rockin' and light, and it's a mighty good boy. Rockin' and light, and it's a little bit right. Rockin' and light, it's a mighty good boy. Sea shanties and the blues and the work songs that I loved. So I started putting them up on the internet for free download. This is back in November of 1995. And back then we didn't have MP3s, so I put them up in WAVE files. But when MP3s came along, I switched everything to MP3s, and there are over 240 MP3s up there for free download, along with the chords and the lyrics and a little story about the song and the picture. And a section called the Folk Dance. So, It's almost 20 years. At the 10th anniversary in 2005, we released a 4-CD set, and we totally re-recorded them for CD quality, because the MP3s are up on them for free, but if you want the full CD quality, it's in a package, along with a booklet that explained what the songs are about. And it's coming up on the 20th anniversary, and we're working on that now. Should have that ready by late November. Going to be the Foten Project Volume 2. And this is one of the songs that's in the Foten. It's an old blues song that was originally called Gambler's Blues. And in 1929, Cap Calloway got a hold of it, and he renamed it the St. James Infirmary Blues. And this is one of the songs that's from a ship that was based in Maui and went up fishing in the cold Kamchatka region of Russia for 6 months. And then after 6 months of fishing, came back down to Maui and had 6 months off. Pretty cool, huh? Called Rolling Down to Old Maui.
Somebody took life, but I tried to strike. We remember the gold, and we really don't care what the gale has done, how hard them winds did blow. We're homeward bound from the Arctic around with a good ship popping free. Then we'll have our fun when we drink our rum with the girls of old Maui. Down to Old Maui, waves through the ice and wind and rain. I'm coconut from them tropical lands we soon shall see again. 6 brutal months have passed away on the cold and chocolate sea. But now we're bound for the Arctic ground, pulling down to old Maui. Pulling down to old Maui, the boys, pulling down to old Maui. We're homeward bound from the Arctic ground, pulling down to old Maui. Once more we sail with a northerly gale, headed to our island home. Our mainmast sprung, our wind bound, and we ain't got far to roam. Our stunsail booms is carried away, what care we for that sound? The leering gale is after us, thank God we're overbound. Pulling down to old Maui, the boys, pulling down to old Maui. We're homeward bound from the Arctic ground, pulling down to old Maui.
Songs of the Sea. We were going to call it 23 Songs of the Sea, but we decided to shorten it down to just 3 letters. C, C, D, like IBM or LSD. Well, it's that silly season again when folks are going around singing songs like this one. Something different. It's like, let's go to Mars. I said, what do you mean? He said, I don't know, something like a circus. I went, okay. That's all he said about it. And we went back to shooting baskets. He's much better than I am. A couple months later, I was on the road with my band and I had a lot of dates booked across the U.S. And I had some time off, so I went to Greenwich Village where I used to live. And I went to a club I used to go to. And in the back room was my friend Chuck Leedy, who was a Broadway director, and Bob Dylan, sitting at a table having a couple of brandies. Now Chuck was real dramatic, because he was a Broadway guy. He threw the table over, and the brandies went flying in the air like an old Western movie. And they both stood up and said, Roger, we were just talking about you. We're putting this tour together, and we want you to come out on it. I said, oh, I don't know if I can. I got all these dates booked with my band. And I said, oh, that's too bad. Well, the next day, I called my agent and asked if I could move the dates, and he said I could. So I went out on the Rolling Thunder tour. Rolling Thunder Review was Bob Dylan and Jim Baez, Bobby Newhart, Ravlin, Jack Elliott, Allen Ginsberg, Joni Mitchell was along. And Bob had borrowed a bus from Frank Zappa. See now, when we toured in the Burbs, we used to charter a bus from Continental Railways or somebody. And it had all the seats in it, and it had a driver with a hat like a policeman. And he scared us. So we always hang out in the back of the bus. But Frank Zappa was really smart. He took all the seats out, and he put a bedroom in the back, and bunks in the middle, and couches, and TVs, and it was like, it was a motorhome. It was an urban motorhome. So, and Joan Baez had the suite in the back, the bedroom in the back, because she was a queen of folk music. And I had a bunk in the middle, and so the T-Bone Burnett and Mick Ronson. And up front, on the couches, you had the driver, Joni Mitchell, used to sit, because she could see everything. And she was writing songs all day long. And she was writing songs about things she could see. She'd look out the window and see the white lines on the highway. She'd write down the white lines on the highway. She had one of these little composition books with a black and white speckled cover like kids have in school. And it was all full of new songs. I got some feedback up here. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so I was getting ready to do an album for Columbia Records called Cardiff Rose, and I had most of the songs all done, but I needed a couple more from the outside to fill in. So I went up and sat on the couch next to Joni Mitchell. I said, "Hey, Joni, you got any spare songs?" She said, "Well, Gwen, I got one song you might be able to use, but you might not feel comfortable with a line in it." I said, "What's that?" She said, "I wrapped their flag around me like Dorothy L'Amour Sarong." I said, "I can work with that." So it came out like that. Turn my mic back on. Still trying to find the feedback. Turn everything off. Bird Rose Theater. Anyway, this is the way the song came out on our Cardiff Rose album, Dreamland. It's a long, long way from Canada, long way from snow chain, don't be there, it's nice and polka dot, no parkas to their name. Covered in many flowers, cause got a carnival song laid out some place in me with Dreamland put on. Dreamland, 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 dreamland. So while we're running in Chris Columbus, come marching out of the waves, claim the beach and all concessions. In the name of the suntan slaves. And I wrap their flag around me like an arrow flings around. They act like a national dreamland. Over a glass of rum, burning on the inside.
streets full of traffic sand, comes a lady dressed in a foreign flag. Ah, yeah, I remember my broken. Now comes New York City, 6 foot drift on Myrtle's lawn. As he pushed a reclining buttons down, it's creating like a
for the film score, Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. And this is one of the songs, and it happens to be one of my favorite Dylan songs ever. I'm sure you recognize it, and I'd like you to sing along on the chorus. I'ma take this badge off of me.
Scream! I said, if we reach the fate, is it our strength?
14, you're the little saint. Looking at a public affair, don't forget that you are a rock and roll star.
And it was another situation where I had most of the songs ready for a record, but I didn't have them all. And my manager was around the corner, he was playing me records and tapes, and I couldn't see what he was putting on. He put on this song that sounded so much like something I might have done. I was kidding him. I said, when did I record that? He said, it isn't you. I said, I know it. I recognize the song. It's a great song. Who is it? He said, it's this new guy, Tom Petty. I said, oh, I want to meet him. So the next day I got to meet Tom, and in fact we went on tour up and down the East Coast and had a lot of fun. And this is what the song sounded like. Somebody ought to take a look at it. And they had a doctor backstage. So we went backstage. And just as we were going backstage, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers were getting off the bus and coming to their dressing room. And Tom saw me in the hall. He said, Roger McGuinn. You gotta come up on stage and do some songs. Now, this is Tampa, Florida. In the summer, I was wearing white shorts and a red Hawaiian shirt. I looked more like I was going to a Jimmy Buffett concert. But I got up and I did a couple of songs anyway. And the next day, he invited us out to the beach hotel where he was staying with his family. And his daughters were quite young at the time. And so we're on flying kites out on the beach. And Tom said, you know, in a couple of weeks, I'm going to tour Europe with Dylan. I said, oh, you're going to have so much fun, man. I remember the Rolling Thunder review, how great that was. And Tom said, well, I'll ask Bob if he can come along. I said, okay. So the next day he called up and said, yeah, I talked to Bob. He said, bring him along. He can be the opening act. Well, the way the tour was structured was Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers were the house band. So they came up and backed me up on some bird songs, and then they did their set, and then they backed Bob up on his show, and we all got together at the end and sat knocking on heaven's door. Yeah, and at the very end of the tour in London, George Harrison joined us on knocking on heaven's door. That was very, very good. And Tom was reading this book while he was out on the road, and it was about John Phillips. It was an autobiography of John Phillips called Papa John.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, I knew John and Michelle Phillips in Greenwich Village before the Mamas and Papas, before the Birds. We were all just folkies playing coffee houses. Staying in the same cheap hotel, it was $3 a night, called the Earl Hotel. It's on Waverly Place in Washington Square. And $3 a night was about as much as you could make at the coffee houses passing the hat around. So I wanted to read the book too, and I did. And Tom and I kind of compared notes after I read it. And we decided it was good material for a song. So we wrote this next song based on John Phillips' autobiography, Papa John. And Tom sang with me on my back from Rio called King of the Hill. Thank you. named after Chestnut Mary.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can tell from where you're sitting. I'll tell you, Bobby Dennis. I don't know if you can tell from where you're sitting, but this guitar's got an extra string on it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Not on the bottom, not on the top. It's in the middle. And it's like a closed string. More flexible than a 12 because you can bend the string. Or do little runs like I was doing on a Pretty Boy Floyd. So it's kind of like a Swiss Army knife of a guitar. And I had one made at the custom shop at Martin Guitar, and before they could send it to me, a couple other guitar players came down and played it. Said, hey, I like this, I want one too. So they made a whole run of them called the Roger Boyd HD10. And if you get one of these, you'll be able to play this right out of the box. Jokes about banjos. It takes a lot of heat from other musicians for some reason. Like, what's the difference between a Harley and a banjo? You can tune a Harley. What's the difference between cutting up an onion and cutting up a banjo? Nobody cries when you cut up a banjo. The definition of a gentleman, it's a man who knows how to play the banjo, but doesn't. Now this has an interesting clapping pattern. I want you to clap in two specific places. Clap, clap, clap. Mm-hmm. But I was going to tell you how I got to work with Bobby Darin. I was an accompanist. I was a studio musician and accompanist for some folk groups. And we toured the Chattanooga Trio. We toured in South America for 90 days on the State Department. And we were goodwill ambassadors for the United States down in Central and South America, which is a pretty funny thing to do. And there would be machine gun fire block over there, and then the CIA guys would take us over, like the USIS technically, take us over the block and say, "Yankee, go home," up on the wall. And they said, "Well, that's been there a long time," and the blue paint was still dripping down the wall. I was relieved to get back to the United States, and we ended up at the Crescendo Club in Hollywood, opening up for Lenny Bruce. Yeah, Lenny was really hilarious. He was in jail. And Bobby Darin was out in the audience. He came, I think he came to see Lenny, but he stayed for the Chattanooga Trio show. And after the show, he came backstage and he came up to me and said, "Hey, I liked what you were doing up there. I'm thinking about putting a folk segment in my act." And I said, "Well, I've already done a job with the Chattanooga Trio." He said, "Yeah, what are you paying you?" And I told him, he said, "I'll double it." I went, "Okay." So Bobby loved folk music, and I got to go around the country and sing harmony with him and play guitar behind him. It was a lot of fun. And then his voice got a little rough, so his doctor told him to take a break from singing. He opened up a publishing company in New York in the Grill Building, 1619 Broadway, across the street from where Carol King and Jerry Goffin were working at Aldine, which was 1650 Broadway. But 1619 Broadway was the famous Grill Building, the home of Tin Pan Alley. And the job was pretty simple. It was listen to the radio and write songs like the ones that were already out there. So the Beach Boys and Shannon Dean were popular at that time. So I thought I'd take a stab at surf music. I was writing with Frank Gehry. We always had partners, I think, with Kenny Young and Artie Resnick and Frank Gehry. Those guys were under the boardwalk a little later than that. I wrote this song, and I took it down the hall to Bobby and played it for him, and he liked it so much that he booked a studio downstairs in the Brill Building. The Brill Building was a good example of vertical integration, because they had recording studios and publishing companies and record companies all in the same building. And you could get a record deal and a publishing deal and record things and have a hit record right out of that building. So that's what happened. We moved downstairs and recorded it. And Bobby Turner played drums on it. I played guitar, Frank Gehry played piano. And we all clapped our hands and kind of, "Hey, hey, hey," like we were at the beach. And got a record deal on Capitol. Bobby got us a record deal. He was on Capitol, so it was easy for him. And we had to come up with a name for the group. So we called ourselves the City Surfers. Because we're all from the city and we didn't know how to surf. I'll give you a little example if you want not too long. Summer's here and it's time to have a party. We're going to the beach, we're going to have a beach ball. And a carpool of dogs and a tropical silver. We're going to keep it swinging until next fall. Oh, we're having a beach ball. Everybody's feeling fine. Oh, we're going to have a beach party. Could you find a better way to spend the summer time? Studio recorded with McGuinn Clark and Noble, and the Bee Gees were in the next studio over, and we bumped into each other in the hall, and they came up to me and said, "Hey, we sang background on a song you wrote," and I couldn't imagine a song I'd written the Bee Gees would have sung on. I said, "Yeah, it was called Beach Ball. It was number 6 in Australia." Well, back at the Brill Building, my job was to listen to the radio and write songs like the ones out there, and this came over the airwaves. Oh yeah, it is over. I think you love those men, the Beatles. See, there are a million folk songs that have all these passing chords are all folk music chords. Because they've been in a skiffle band before they were the Beatles, called the Quarrymen. So they knew a lot of folk chords, and they were using them for their rock and roll. I thought, oh, that's a cool idea. So I started taking old folk songs and souping them up with a Beatle beat. And I take an old song like, the water is wide, I cannot cross over, and neither have I wings to fly. And I put a Beatle beat to it like this. The water is wide, I cannot cross over, and neither have I wings to fly. Loved it. He put a sign outside the door that said, Beatle impersonation. A lot of tourist buses were coming around. It was kind of embarrassing. I said, man, it's time to get out of New York. So I flew out to LA and I got a job at the Troubadour Folk Club in Hollywood. Yeah. So, I was opening up for Hoyt Axton. And there was this unknown guy in the middle of the bill named Roger Miller. I'm gonna take a rope and hang it high from the highest tree. Won't you weep for me? Roger Miller was going over great, and Hoyt Axton, of course, was going over great. He was the headliner, and I was doing folk songs with the Beatle beat. Nobody liked it, except one guy came backstage after the show. His name was Gene Clark. I like the Beatles and I like folk music. I see what you're doing. Let's write some songs. So Gene and I sat down in the front room of the Troubadour, a little place called the Folk Tent, started writing songs. And this is one of the first songs we came up with. It was later recorded by a group called the Turtles, and they got a top 10 hit on it. St. James, and he took me for a ride in this Aston Martin EB5, all over London, is what we call it. And we went to a party with the Beatles and the Stones, and they were friends. Who knew? On the way back, we wanted to write a song about the tour, and Gene Clark and I were sitting next to each other on the airplane and said, how high do you think this plane is flying? I so from about 39,000 feet, maybe 7 miles high. 7 miles high, huh? Because the Beatles had a song out called 8 Days a Week, and he thought the number 8 was a lot cooler than the number 7. I said, well, we can change it to 8 miles high. Poetic license. Who's going to care? I was wrong about that, because when the radio stations got a hold of it, they did the math and they said, wait a minute. Commercial airliners don't fly 8 miles high. They must be talking about some other kind of high, man. Over the years, it's kind of evolved. It's got a little bit of Ravi Shankar, some John Coltrane, and some Andre Segovia thrown in just for fun. Started singing harmony with us, and he said, I want to be in your band. I said, well, we don't really have a band aid. We're just running some songs. He said, oh, come on, man. If I can be in your band, I know this guy's got a recording studio. We could use it for free. I said, you're in. So David Crosby took us over to meet his friend Jim Dixon, who was a producer, engineer at World Pacific Records in Hollywood. And Jim kind of took us under his wing. He became our manager, by the way. And he let us play around with the tape machines after all the sessions were over at World Pacific. And that's when we discovered that three guys with an acoustic 12-string didn't sound anything like the Beatles. And we wanted to sound more like the Beatles, so we needed a bass player and a drummer. We saw this guy walking in front of the troubadour. It looked just like two of the Rolling Stones wrapped up in one. We said, him, let's get him. We got Michael Clark to come over and say, hey, you know how to play the drums? He said, well, I play a little congas, man. Good enough. So we got some cardboard boxes, and we taped the tambourine on top of that. And he learned how to play drums on the cardboard boxes. And then we had this $35 bass that we picked up. We got Chris Hillman to come over from Westwood, where he was in a bluegrass band called the Scottsville Squirrel Parkers. And we gave Chris the bass, and he said, here, figure this out. And I went, okay. He had it right away. He was an ace mandolin picker, and he could play guitar and play bass right away. So we had a bass player and kind of a drummer, but we didn't have any decent instruments. So we went to see the movie A Hard Day's Night and copied down what the Beatles were playing. Okay, Ringo Starr has Ludwig drums. We've got to get some Ludwig drums. George Harrison has a Gretsch guitar. We've got to get a Gretsch guitar. John Lennon has a little Rickenbacker. We've got to get one of those. And we didn't get a Hofner bass. I think Chris got a Guild bass. But we got some good instruments. We went and bought them. And then George came out with another Rickenbacker that looked like a six string from the front. But then he turned it sideways, and you could see six other tuning pegs sticking out the back. I'm like, oh, that's a sneaky electric 12-string. I got to get one of those. So I traded in an acoustic 12, a 5-string banjo, and some cash, and got a Rickenbacker electric 12-string like that. So we had musicians, we had instruments, but we were looking for a name. We're sitting at the Thanksgiving table. Somebody said, what about the Birdseeds? I said, oh, that's too cute. No, we couldn't use that. And somebody else said, well, what about the Birds? Well, this is 1964. Birds was slang for girls in England. We didn't want to be girls. They said, that's simple enough. Just change the spelling. What about E-U-R-D-S? we didn't like that. So we changed it to B-Y-R-D-S. Good idea. And Jim Dixon arranged for us to do an audition for this big agent in Hollywood named Benny Shapiro. So we all went over to Benny's house and we sang a couple of songs for him. And we didn't know it, but he had a 14-year-old daughter upstairs. She came running down the stairs, Daddy, Daddy, who's that? She thought the Beatles were in her living room. The next day, Miles Davis came over to talk to Benny. And Benny's talking to Miles. He said, you know, a funny thing happened last night. These kids came over to audition and my daughter heard them and flipped out. She thought they were great. And Miles said, well, kids have a way of knowing things like that. So he picked up the phone and called Columbia Records. He said, you know that rock band you've been looking for? I think I got them for you. And they signed us on his recommendation. But 1964, Columbia Records was very conservative. They had classical music. They had Broadway show tunes. They had Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet and Doris Day. No rock and roll. They're kind of scared of rock and roll. So the deal they gave us wasn't for a whole album, it was for one single. And if we got a hit with that single, we could go back in the studio and record the rest of the album. So we needed a really strong song, and nobody thought any of our songs were that strong. But Jim Dixon had overheard a couple of record producers in Hollywood talking about Bob Dylan, saying, you know, it's a shame Bob can't use that great new song he just wrote because somebody singing out of tune on it. It wasn't Bob. So we got a copy of it sent out from Whitmark & Sons, the publishing company in New York that Bob Dylan had, to the World Pacific Studio. And we all sat around on the Oriental Road of the World Pacific Studio listening to this demo. It was about 4 minutes and 19 seconds long in 2/4 time. You got 4 minutes and 19 seconds? This is what we heard, something like this.
dance and still got it. I promise to go under it. Venus and tambourine and fits no more to me. I'm not sleepy and there's no place I would be. Venus and tambourine and fits no more to me. The jingle tangle glory and curtains follow.
So we cut it down to one verse with a chorus on either end, and we picked the verse about the boot heels because the Beatles had these really cool Cuban boots. And I've been playing around on the guitar with a little Bob. I thought, what if I put something like that on the front and the back for an intro and an outro? It might come out okay for radio. Came out like... Thank you. We got a number one hit within 13 countries. And the next number one hit we had was a Pete Seeger song. Now, I listened to Pete Seeger. I was a big fan. I used to go to all his concerts, and I heard Pete Seeger do this song when I was a kid. And then I was a studio musician in New York, and I got to work with Paul Simon and other people, and Judy Collins. And I was on Judy Collins' third album as musical director, and she did Turn, Turn, Turn on that album. So somebody asked me about Turn, Turn, Turn. You know, Pete tells a story about how he came up with the song. It's on my Story Songs and Friends DVD. He says, my publisher wrote me a letter. He said, Pete, you just got to stop writing these protest songs because I can't sell them. And Pete said, I got mad. He pulls the slip of paper out of his pocket, says, to everything there's a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. And he added the little turn, turn, turn to kind of round it out. And at the end he put, a time for peace, I swear it's not too late. So it was a protest song after all. When Judy Collins did it and Pete Seeger did it, they did it kind of like, to everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time to every purpose. Somebody asked me if I knew it, and so immediately I put a rock and roll beat to it and changed the chord structure and the melody a little bit, and it came out kind of... Thank you.
Oh, when you go.